shepherdess at last. Then Rispa, the daughter of Aia, took a sack and stretched it out for herself on a rock, from the beginning of the harvest until water dripped on them from heaven. And she did not allow the birds of heaven to rest on them by day, nor the beasts of the field by night. 2 Samuel 21, verse 10. It was a sad story of Rispa, the daughter of Aia. Once she had been a concubine of King Saul, and after he died she had become the center of a furious adventure. On the one hand, the son of Saul, supported by the common rights of those days, desired to have her. But on the other hand, Abner, Saul's general, wanted to enjoy the pleasures which his late master had promised himself by her. Finally, a violent quarrel arose between these men for their love of this woman. The son of Saul, who also wanted to be his successor, would not grant Rispa to his general, to Abner. Although he knew very well that this man was the only one who could fight for his throne against David, the son of Jesse, and though he was really a weak character, he yet dared to argue with Abner for the sake of that particular woman. But he had a rude awakening, for the end of the story was that the general forsook the weak son of the king and transferred his loyalty to David. Thus Abner extinguished the light of Saul. Indeed, that woman had at that time been the center of action with Saul, the son of Saul, and the general of both. She was desired by 3 great ones in the realm, a center in the realm of Saul. Yes, indeed. Yet, in all of this, she had not been a center in the theocratic kingship. She had not been a heart of love in this sense, that she combined the love of youth, the romance of blood, and the sexual longing in accordance to the law of God's theocratic kingdom, with the love of the Spirit, the love for service in office to God and his people. Thus Rispa was a mirror image of all the mystery of Saul's kingship, for Saul himself was initially called to be king of the theocratic kingdom. Thus he should have connected his own honor with that of God, his own cause with the cause of the Lord, his own desires and adventures with the Spirit of God, with the regularity, with the spiritual official, self-restraint of the self-conscious office-bearer. But of all these things, nothing had come about with Saul. The wine which was poured in his house became no image, but counter-image of the shadow of Christ's blood. There were many shadows in Saul's house, but not one of them was a shadow of the Christ. When Saul was thus rejected and replaced by David, the misery caused by the house of Saul continued its work. There was a famine. God was angry. People asked why God was angry at his people. And the answer was that Saul's violation of the theocratic constitution, which had bound the king's house and the people together, was yet the cause of the calamities. Did not Saul once transgress the oath given to the Gibeonites? And was the violation of that oath not a trampling of the glory of the theocratic kingship, that also wanted to show strangers, including even the Gibeonites, that in the covenant of God with Israel, not brute force, but justice and truth would ordain a peaceful order? And when it had become clear that this was the reason for God's indignation, a terrible decision was made. 7 sons of the house of Saul would be exterminated. They had, as we afterward may deduct from the facts of history, also pledged themselves to the antiocratic running of Saul's government, and participated in it. We deduct this from the double fact that, on the one hand, this offering seems to have been included in the framework of the Lord's own sentence in this matter, and on the other hand, there is a stipulation by the same God that a son should not die for the iniquity of the father. Indeed, he would die along with, but not for that iniquity. Thus, 7 sons of Saul soon hung at the pillory. And then Rispa's life took a decided turning point. When after the execution everyone had departed and, moreover, left the course of things only to God, She remained at that place of execution, she alone. She wanted to guard those 7 dead bodies, of which only 2 were those of her own children. She wanted to keep watch until at length the rain would drop, the famine would disappear, and the bodies of Saul's children would get an honorable burial, without being consumed by wild animals. She was a shepherdess at last. Had this woman been a hearth of love in Saul's palace, not sexually romantic, but theocratically in accordance to the nature of the theocratic kingship, then she would have wanted to heal the sick spirit of Saul by the word, the prophetic word, which once called Saul to the kingship. Then she would have been a good shepherdess in the midst of the parade of unfaithful shepherds, a good one, and at a proper time. But now that she, in the time which God had allotted her for that faithful shepherding, had participated in the bad game of life of wicked shepherds, she came much too late. She had borne 2 sons to Saul, but she had never been a mother in Israel according to Israel. And now she could no longer be a shepherdess to the living, but only to the dead. And all of her tears did not wash away the curse which also because of her guilt had come upon the house of Saul. To be a hearth of love in the covenant community, indeed, that is a social action before the eye of God among the people. To understand the law of theocracy, and according to that combine one's own young love with the future desire of the church, the sexual with the spiritual love, natural longings with the driving of the spirit, the enjoyment of the soul with the service of office bearer, the romance of life with the gospel, our history with that one history of Christ, only that makes us into good shepherds as a visible and shadow image of Christ. That makes it possible for a woman, even if she were only a concubine, who once was the center of a circle of adventurers, to be a mother in and also according to Israel. But Rizpah, who in Israel was a mother, but not according to Israel, remains a frightening example to us of the rule that nobody will be left unpunished who pledges himself to the desecration of the law of theocratic living, either by his own deed or by following the deed of someone else in our immediate circle of life. The one who became shepherdess at last would, without the good shepherd, remain the forsaken shepherdess, a sterile one, who never would give birth again, unless she called for being born again herself.